evening, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you on Sunday evening, February 11th. It is now about 8:31 p.m. Central Time. Folks, this station is your antidote to popular talk radio, where you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, Rio de Janeiro, Paris, or Stalingrad. We must take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. It's time to shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Good evening, everyone. This evening we have a guest with us, and our topic will be Real ID, America's Real Danger. And before I start, what I would like to do is mention to you that we would like for you to call in during our live broadcast. And that new number is 646 area code 652-4620. And we can take your questions and comments over the air. At other times, you may call area code 903-551-2186. That's 903-551-2186. That's off-Broadway, off-broadcast time number. Or you can send us email at comments at libertytalkradio.com. Okay. All right. The Real ID Act of 2005 has radical implications for the future of state driver's licenses and a number of agencies which will have to access the personal information of American citizens. While the act passed the United States Congress with no floor debate in the House and Senate leaders nationwide have come to realize the danger that the act poses to privacy and fiscal responsibility. Consequently, states have undertaken a full-fledged Real ID rebellion. Mike Hammer, founder of the Oklahoma Defense of Freedom Project, will discuss the opportunity Oklahoma now has to join the rebellion and what you can do to take part. Mike is our guest tonight, and Mike Hammer is the founder of the Oklahoma Defense of Freedom Project and Northwest Coordinator for the Oklahoma Coalition of Independents. He was recently a candidate for state representative in House District number 59, in which he finished with the highest vote total of any independent in the state in a three-way race. He has also interned for the Oklahoma Council of Public Affairs, of which I am a member, by the way, where he wrote and edited articles advocating economic freedom and fiscal responsibility. Mike has followed the Real ID issue closely since its inception, and last fall hosted Representative Neil Kirk of the New Hampshire General Assembly to speak on the Real ID issue at Oklahoma University and Oklahoma State University. Representative Kirk gained nationwide attention by authoring the first legislation in the nation to oppose Real ID. Mike holds degrees from Georgetown University and Oxford University and is currently completing a Master of Public Administration degree from the University of Oklahoma. And with that, good evening, Mike.
Good evening, Joe. It's great to be here.
Well, we're glad to see you here. Not many people would condescend to be on a radio program on a Sunday evening when you're supposed to be mellowing out from a long week, you know.
Well, football season's over, and it's a good way of pretending work doesn't start again in the morning, so it's a great pleasure to be here.
Well, we got you at a good time then, didn't we?
That's all right.
Very
that's
good.
Right.
Okay.
That's right. Super Bowl was last week. I think the Pro Bowl's tonight. But
by the way, this has absolutely nothing to do with our program. Were you voting, rooting for either one of the Indianapolis or Chicago? Which team were you rooting for?
I have to say I was strongly in favor of Indianapolis. I can't really tell you why. I think that I'm glad to see a great champion such as Peyton Manning finally get his critics off his back. I think there's little too much criticism in the world and not enough recognition of the greatness of athletes and others sometimes.
He did a great job, though.
He sure did.
Okay, now, on to our program. Wow, Real ID. What I find amazing about this subject right now is that I listen to TV not as much as many people because I'm too busy, although I probably would be affixed to the TV more. But all I've heard recently on TV is Anna Nicole, Anna Nicole Smith,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, Anna Nicole Smith, right? Her untimely death. Now that seems to be a national obsession and the most important news item that's of any value on TV. Now, tell us something about this Real ID. Where did it come from? Where was it going? Where is it now? And where are we going with it? Give us some background.
Well, Real ID came from the mind of Representative James Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin. He's a longtime representative, longtime advocate of pretty much any measure necessary to fight terrorism or any of the other evils in the world. And so after September 11th, what has traditionally been American opposition to any type of national identification sort of took second seat to the imminent threat of terrorism. And so Representative Sensenbrenner authored the Real ID Act of 2005. It was feared that it might fail in a House debate on the floor, so it was attached to a tsunami relief and military appropriations bill without amendment, without debate, and passed nearly unanimously in the House and passed unanimously in the Senate as an attachment to this appropriations bill. Not many people really knew what Real ID was about or what the implications would be until New Hampshire became the first state to step up and say, no, we don't want to take part in this federal legislation. I think that the most important thing someone can know about Real ID is that it leaves open the possibility for states to act. Within the text of the bill, the Real ID Act says that states may choose to opt out of the requirements of the bill. What the Act requires, what Real ID requires, is a federalization of driver's license standards. It says that all states must comply with these standards. But what really has civil liberties advocates upset is that two things. First, that it requires all state databases of driver's license information to be synchronized with federal databases, meaning that now, all of a sudden, Joe Cristiano's information is not just available to the Oklahoma Department of Public Safety. It's not just available to the FBI, assuming if he's being investigated. It's available constantly to a number of federal agencies and to all of the other states. The final issue concerning that concerns civil liberties advocates is that there is a real concern that Real ID is an important piece in a future architecture of information control. And what that really means is that the driver's licenses of today are capable of maintaining and disseminating a significant amount of personal information. Not just information to that's relevant to your driving record or to your operation of a motor vehicle, but also information about your health records, your commercial transactions, your any biometric type of information. The capability and technology exists for that type of information to be demanded and distributed in the future. And so the Real ID Act is not just about what the dangers of today. It's also a lot of people feel an important part of taking us down the slippery slope of tomorrow.
Right. Well, where did the term REAL come from? Is that an acronym for something?
No, it's not an acronym. In fact, it's the advocates, the proponents of this bill, it's their way of saying that only with these standards are we going to have driver's licenses which we can keep terrorists and illegal immigrants from gaining access to.
Well, I, for one, don't have the highest regard for everyone who's serving in U.S. Congress today. But are we saying that there are very, very few senators and very few congressmen who are not up in arms because this thing got finagled through and basically, I mean, they should have known, but without their knowledge, without debate, no one's complaining about this, and this was done in 2005?
Well, I'm not going to speak for all of the 535 members of Congress. There were some at the time that knew that this was happening. One prominent example is Representative Ron Paul of Texas. He's known as Dr. No, and he voted against that appropriations bill, knowing full well that the Real ID Act was there. But also, he probably would have voted against it anyway. But but he and some others in Congress knew about this at the time, tried to warn others. But you get the sense that the rebellion, the Real ID rebellion that's taking place now, is really a catalyst. The catalyst is the states. And so some federal legislators, particularly Senator Sununu from New Hampshire, and the senator from Hawaii, whose name I can't remember right offhand, have now sponsored legislation, federal legislation, to repeal the Real ID Act. But it is, I share your skepticism, because it is kind of a mystery that this just happened, and not very many people got really worked up about it until the state started making a fuss, and then all of a sudden people started getting concerned about it in Congress again.
I know the untimely death of Anna Nicole Smith was important to us, but, I mean, poor gal, you know, 39 years old. But that's all you hear on with something like that. Similar to that, I'm being facetious, obviously, I mean, in a sense, but something like that happens. It is a 24-hour-a-day update as to the autopsy. And I mean, they go through the every detail, the entire her entire life history. And here is something that affects every single citizen, whether they be a minor, whether they be the graying population, whether they be working people, non-working people. It affects absolutely everyone, and our news media, niche, not a word. You know, I can almost sit here and say, you know, now you're jiving with me. That really didn't occur, because not one major news broadcast has been brought up about that.
Right.
I mean, what happened to the Glenn Becks of this world? What happened to the Rush Limbaughs? I mean, did no one pick this up, or did they all ignore it? Or I sound like this conspiratorial, like they're all in this conspiracy together, except for you and I.
Well, I'll tell you, the pathologies of the media would probably take us down an entirely different path. But I was out of the country at the time, so I can't tell you firsthand what the media response was in terms of live television broadcasts around the time of Real ID. But I can tell you, I did extensive research on the internet just within several weeks after the act passed, and I share your skepticism. I would have to say that I was really surprised at the lack of coverage about this issue.
You would think that this would be an issue that would be the main thrust of every or the front page of every daily paper, and would be the one of the major come-ons to the news broadcast almost on a daily basis, whether it be morning, you know, news break, or evening, and not a word. There's something wrong with our entire system. I'm not blaming you, Mike. I'm just saying that I find that absolutely astonishing that this is something really big, and no one's saying anything. I mean, if you wanted to be conspiratorial, you'd say, ha-ha, the news media is in cahoots with Congress and all that. But that can't be, because even those people who criticize Congress from A to Z haven't said much about this either. It seems like this is a real stealth bill.
It really was. It really was.
All right. Now, I was discussing a national ID the other day with a friend of mine, saying, well, you are going to come and talk about it. And he says, that sounds like a good idea. Now, Why the heck isn't that a real good idea? Everyone would have an ID card and all their information on it so we'd know who they are. And, of course, then we can identify all those illegals. You know, what right. seems to be wrong? That seems like a perfect system. What's wrong with it?
Well, several things. I think the fact that there's not been media coverage, I think the fact that there is a significant portion of our nation that could answer, that could feel that way about a national ID, I think that shows how far we've devolved as a culture. I think that says that we do not cherish liberty as a cultural value. I think that real ID was a real shock to people's systems. A lot of people such as myself who have always been very trusting towards government suddenly realized that here was something that seemed to drop entirely out of the blue. But when you get into it, what you find is that Real ID was not anything new. It was a culmination of a long history stretching back for decades of an increasing pattern of data collection, of information sharing, without adequate legal controls, without adequate oversight for privacy. And so the fact that your friend or your acquaintance might say, well, that sounds like a great idea, he's not alone in saying that. But it says, we have come to the point where we think that security trumps liberty as a cultural value. And we've also come to the point where we think that identification equals security. And that's been the real issue with Real ID, that identification does not equal security. And some of the most intelligent people in this nation have said that, in fact, Real ID is going to make it easier for illegal immigrants and terrorists to acquire United States driver's licenses.
Well, how is that? How would it be easier?
Well, the argument is, Representative Neil Kirk, that we mentioned a moment ago, one of his favorite arguments against Real ID is to pretend that under the requirements of Real ID, Osama bin Laden is trying to acquire a state driver's license, say, right here in Oklahoma. Well, one of the requirements of Real ID is that the Department of Motor Vehicles officials have to take several days. There will now be a several day waiting period for your driver's license because they have to call and verify your identity documents. So Osama bin Laden says, well, all right, I need a United States driver's license. He goes to Saudi Arabia, to Pakistan, and he says to someone in their equivalent of the Department of Motor Vehicles, I'm going to kill your family, blow up your village, etc., if you don't issue me appropriate papers. And when the United States calls, if you don't tell them that I'm who this paper says I am, that I'm Joe Smith, then I'm still going to blow up your village, kill you, your family, etc. Because Real ID just assumes that if you call and that office verifies that this person's document, that this person is who their document says they are, that means that that's who that document says they are. It's a very simplistic logic. And we already have an international market in false IDs, and Real ID puts weakness on the weakest part of that system, which is foreign identification documents.
Well, I suspect if you had a Real ID system, people would start assuming that because you have a valid Real ID card, that you are who you say you are.
Absolutely.
Thus, that trumps any other investigation or suspicion.
That's exactly
so,
right.
You have it, you're fine, go on there, boom. Right,
exactly.
Basically. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, what about all those people who come from a foreign country, who are here now, and they don't have a birth certificate because they're the originating country where they were born? They don't have paperwork. I mean, they're here now as citizens. How do they? Can they get? What kind of document do they show if they don't have a birth certificate?
Well, that's also a problem for the elderly population, which you mentioned a minute ago, the gray population, because many of that generation still alive don't have birth certificates. For example, my own grandmother, her birth certificate does not have her legal name on it because it was issued several days after she was born. Well, your question is a question that the Department of Homeland Security, which has responsibility for regulations, has not yet answered. There is no B plan at this point because the law itself, the text of the Real ID Act, says that there shall be no substitute for the birth certificate document.
Oh, there is no substitute for it.
Now, probably the Department of Homeland Security can issue a regulation saying, here's what you can do. But this issue about not having birth certificates has been a major argument because it's also very similar to the issue about voter identification in Georgia that occurred in this last election cycle. Because there's poor elderly population, the international population that you mentioned. Real ID just assumes that this standardization is possible and that it's already occurred, and there's really been no thought to that question.
Right. But there's no plan B. Like, if you don't have a birth certificate, we'll take your passport or something like that. There's no hierarchy at this point as to...
Well, I mean, I could probably speculate about what it would be, but at this point, there is no regulation about that.
Now, many people who come over from Mexico don't have birth certificates because they come from small towns,
right,
and there just ain't nothing like that.
Right.
So I guess we're going to have possibly hundreds of thousands of people and possibly millions who are going to fit into that category.
Well, not only, especially using the example of people coming from Mexico, not only is that what's going to happen if Real ID stays law, that's why it became law in the first place, because it's not secret knowledge, it's not conspiratorial to say that Sensenbrenner used September 11th as an opportunity to pass what was actually an anti-immigration bill.
Right, right.
So that's exactly what's going to happen to people from those villages, to American citizens, to other internationals. I mean, as concerns the Hispanic population, people from Mexico, legal or illegal, it is the Real ID is a groundwork for a major dragnet.
Well, we talked about the graying population. What about those that are under the age of either 18 or 16, depending on which state you're in, where you're not granted a driver's license? Do we give a driver's license or a Real ID card to a 14-year-old? Or, I mean, how does that work?
Yes. The Real ID Act applies to identification cards as well as driver's licenses.
So if you're 14 years old, you still must apply for a Real ID card.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Now, they're going to integrate these databases with the state and federal government. First of all, I want to bet, and I'll go on the air, says, I will bet $10,000 cash that cannot be done. Or if it is done, it will be such a mess that it's undiscernible. Anyone want to take that bet out there? Please write in or call in. All right. Oh, by the way, I just want to just take a second. This is Liberty Talk Radio. And if you'd like to take part in this conversation, you can call and get on the air. You'll be live at area code 646-652-4620. And that's area code 646-652-4620. Just give us your first name and where you're calling from, and this is Liberty Talk Radio. Okay, and now we'll resume with our guest, Mike Hammer, who is the founder of the Oklahoma Defense Freedom Project, the Defense of Freedom Project, I'm sorry.
No problem.
And I think I fouled it up twice already today. And he's here talking about Real ID, that's national identification cards for each and every one of us. Didn't Canada have something like this? Canada had a database for gun owners or something. Some other database they had, and they said it cost billions of dollars.
The database issue.
Database issue, right? And it never panned out. They never caught one criminal with it, and now it's such a mess it's going to cost mega billions to unravel, and they're not sure, and they're guaranteed it's not going to work. But this almost sounds the same thing, and I forgot which program that was under, but this sounds not similar, but this is several times larger.
Absolutely.
Now, let me tell you something. Let me be honest with you. I hate going to the DMVs, the Department of Motor Vehicle. You know, you go for your tag here in Oklahoma.
Right.
I just don't like going. I don't know why I have to go. I don't know why I have to register my car in the first place. I should just pay the tax and that's it. I don't know why I need a driver's license. I don't know why I have to be licensed and registered and all this to drive a car. That's another issue. But I have to go to that place, and it is rare that I walk in that I can be served pretty quickly.
That's right.
And so I sit there. What will happen, in your opinion, with the wait times of going to the Motor Vehicle Bureau? I mean, I just can't imagine there's someone walking in and then who's going to interpret all this data? I mean, how are they going to train these people? I mean, walk through all of that. I mean, this whole thing is mind-boggling to me.
Well, the database issue and the wait time issue are related, because what you're talking about is a massive increase in the amount of information that DMV officials are being called on to process and interpret. So the answer in both cases is that DMV official has to take that time. So you're talking about... I'm sorry.
I think we have a caller.
Okay.
Caller, are you on the line? Caller, are you on the line? Excuse me, Mike.
Yeah, this is John Rupp from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh, yes, John. We have John from Tulsa. John, what's your telephone? What's your question?
Well, I heard from somebody in a coffee shop the other day, and I thought I'd call and see if this is really true, that this new ID card could actually be scanned from a distance if you had the proper scanner, and that we already have that technology. So a policeman could affect, be sitting in a car and scan your car and know who was in your car. Is there anything to that?
Okay, John, we'll answer your question off the air, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for calling in. Just let me interrupt you for 1 minute. Oops. There we go. John's question was, he said he understood that the national ID card can eventually, now or may eventually be able, you'll be able to scan it. And it may be able, you may be able to scan it from a distance. So if you are traveling somewhere, a police department, for example, would know, as you're passing by, boy, that's Mike Hammer that just went by. In other words, it could be used as a surveillance tool. And he wanted to know if there was any truth to that and if that's part of the system.
Well, there are two answers. There's an answer about today, and there's an answer about the future. As far as today goes, I had a really interesting conversation with an official at the Oklahoma Department of Public Safety for about 45 minutes, about a year ago, in which he pointed out to me the back of our current Oklahoma driver's licenses and pointed out the one-dimensional, two-dimensional, and three-dimensional barcodes on the back. And with great excitement in his voice, he said to me, well, we could use those two-dimensional and three-dimensional barcodes to store all kinds of information that would help people, like your health records and like all kinds of things. But the problem is that any time you had to give, for example, your driver's license in these automated systems for checking your age for liquor purchases, anytime they swipe your card through that system, they're going to see all that health record information, anything that we put on there. So we don't currently use those systems. But again, this idea of an architecture of information control, yes, if you look at the back of your Oklahoma driver's license, you will see these barcodes, and these are barcodes which could be used to store a tremendous amount of information.
I am now looking at the back of my driver's license. Damn, I'm a good-looking guy. Look at that picture.
Gosh. It's always important to smile big.
Yeah,
you know?
I said this is the picture they can use at the morgue, you know. Anyway, you're right. I never noticed that there's a barcode on the right-hand side,
yes,
on the reverse side, on the right-hand side, top to bottom. And then there's one strange-looking one on the bottom that has all sorts of, all different squiggly lines in them. I never noticed that either. But will these be able to be scanned from a distance, the real ID cards?
Well, I think what John's referring to there is the fear, and it's a reasonable fear, that when the Department of Homeland Security issues its regulations for the implementation of Real ID, there's been an expectation that the Department of Homeland Security would require radio frequency identification chips. And those chips serve a very similar purpose to the barcodes that we currently have. But that is the fear about RFID technology, that yes, it can be scanned from a distance. It's the same technology that companies are currently using to track cargo shipments. And so it absolutely is a technology that is being used for tracking purposes this very day, this very moment. And that probably for me would not be as big a concern, except that there's reason to believe that, the legal reasons to believe that that might become a possibility. One thing is that international agreement now says that within several years, all United States passports must have RFID chips. So our government is moving in that direction. But also, there was a recent case in the United States Court of Appeals. For the life of me, I didn't plan on talking about this, so I can't remember the name of the case. But it was a case in which that court determined that for due process purposes, for constitutional purposes, the use of a GPS tracking device on a suspect's vehicle did not constitute a search. The police did not acquire a warrant for that to place that GPS device, and by virtue of the court ruling that did not constitute a search, then in fact that means that police in the future will not have to issue warrants to place these GPS devices. And so there is now less legal protection to protect us from involuntary GPS tracking than there is for the wiretapping on our phone.
Well, it seems that one acts as a precedent to the other.
That's right.
Where
if
the precedent didn't exist, then the law as it's stated now stays in effect. If not, it sort of gets watered down. They say, well,
right,
since we do this, thus that, right?
And
this
is right.
The same.
That's right.
Now, what will happen if we had a real ID system? How is there any, for example, someone has to look at the documents being presented. Now, with all due respect to the people at the motor vehicle bureaus and the tag agencies, I don't think right now there's any particular qualification to get a job there. I think in Oklahoma, at least, they're actually given to,
right,
you know, friends of family and stuff like that to open up. I mean, it's a political assignment. It's a assigned position. And they just hire, you know, Aunt Mary and Uncle Sal and stuff like that, and they work there. They don't have any These are the people who are there now. That's the structure. Now, these same people who may have no experience whatsoever in business or in documentation or in anything, you know, they may be just people who have not worked for a long time or worked in unrelated jobs. They're going to be expected to look at these documents and determine whether or not these are legitimate documents that haven't been falsified or haven't been counterfeited, and they constitute a reasonable document for verification. I mean, when I say that, I go goofy because I can't imagine how that's going to be done. Am I exaggerating the situation?
No, you're not. The question you just asked has been another major criticism of Real ID, and so there. I don't think anyone. I certainly don't intend any disrespect toward DMV officials. You know, to this point, it has been a pretty straightforward job, and there have been people who are capable of doing that job. But the question takes us back to the issue of databases. And this is yet another major issue with Real ID, both the database issue and the personnel issue that you just asked about. The National Conference of State Legislatures, the NCSL, has projected for some time that Real ID would cost about $11 billion for the states to implement. And that constitutes at least an $11 billion unfunded mandate from the federal government.
Is that the total United States $11 billion?
That would be total for the startup costs.
Oh.
And by startup costs, they mean creating this database technology, which is not currently in use. So we're talking about billions of dollars for technological innovation and implementation, on top of the fact that the rest of those billions of dollars would have to be for personnel training and also increasing the number of personnel. So this is not just an issue about privacy. It's also an issue about just the general size of government.
Well, I can't imagine the tens of thousands of people who will be required to administer this program
right.
and be educated. I mean, it's right. so. Forget about the liberty issue. The free, you know, the practical issue of saying, okay, hey, Uncle Sal, I'm sorry, you never graduated high school. You were a good worker there and all that, but we got to get someone qualified out the door, and then you got to hire someone with more qualifications, right? You know, I'm looking at this from a businessman's point of view. So you have to hire someone. Well, you have to probably pay them more money,
That's
which
right.
adds to the system. Poor Sal is out of a job. Uncle Sal is out of a job.
That's right.
Now, he's on unemployment. There's this thing you can drag this thing on. I mean, even if you – the amount of time it would take to educate and certify all of these people, it's got to be – the time frame has got to be – quite lengthy.
Absolutely.
Well, what do you do during this whole time frame? I mean, we keep the old system while everyone's going to school or being trained, and who's going to train them, and who's going to certify them, and who's going to determine certifying them, saying that yes, this person is qualified, but then after we say all these people are certified to do so, when you go to Motor Vehicle Bureau now. You wait, you know, you could age in the place, you know.
Right.
I went one time, my clothing went out of style, you know, by the time I got out of there. You can imagine, and all I wanted to do was renew the stupid thing, and all I had to do was stamp some papers.
Right.
I cannot imagine how many people it would require and how long it would take. What is the guesstimate on that?
The guess, the story coming to mind at the moment is a projection that came out of California. And I can't remember if it was their DMV or one of their state agencies. But whichever agency it was, the state of California projected that a driver's license under Real ID would cost about $65 each time that you came up for renewal and would take about 3 days. So now you're not talking about standing in line anymore. You're talking about making two trips is really what it comes down to. Now you say, well, is that a significant burden for an individual? Well, maybe not for one individual, but for 300 million individuals, or you know, the 200 million that have these identification cards, I would say that that amounts to a tremendous waste of our economic and personnel resources in this nation.
I don't think it'll ever happen. I mean, I can see lines around the blocks. I can see people being fed up, and I can actually sense that people say, screw it, I'll drive without a license. And then I'll gamble with that later on.
Well, that's probably what will happen, and that's where the states are, and I think that is that the questions you're asking just now are the single biggest reason that the states that there are now 12 states, right around 12 states, engaging in a real ID rebellion, because they've said, you know what, this is going to cost us millions of dollars to implement. It's something where the Department of Homeland Security hasn't even issued regulations, and we don't know how we're going to make the transition. So you know what? Instead of dealing with an unfunded mandate, instead of putting a burden on our citizens, we're just going to take care of our own standards, and we're going to find our own way to do things. And so, like I said, 12 states now are saying, no, we're not dealing with these headaches anymore.
All right. Where is California on this one, out of curiosity? This being the
to my knowledge, this is not an issue that California is currently on board with. That's not to say it won't happen, but I, to my knowledge, they are not among the 12. I could be wrong.
All right. Let me change the subject or the focus a little bit more.
Okay.
What happened to states' rights?
Well, they went down the toilet.
But yeah, I mean, the states, in our Constitution, the states are the ones with the rights. The federal government basically has no rights
and
cannot preempt the states.
Right.
And it seems that now we assume that the federal government is number one and then the states are subservient to the federal government. The Constitution says otherwise.
Right.
Now, can a state unilaterally say, no, hell no, we're not going to go.
Yes. And there are two reasons for that. First is that the Real ID Act explicitly reserves that right to the states. And the second thing is exactly what you just said, that there has never, ever been any legislation that has given the federal government real authority prior to this over driver's licenses. So, of course, it's something the states can do because the federal government has exerted power through Real ID the same way it has for seven decades. And that is not through direct control, but through coercion. And that's the trick of Real ID, which is to say that without having a Real ID, after May of 2008, an individual cannot enter a federal building or an airport or do business with the federal government. So that's the federal government's way of saying, sure, you can opt out of Real ID, but here's the price you're going to pay. But yet, with that price intact, with that price in place, you still have states now willing to say, okay, we'll deal with that.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, how about we secede from the union?
Well, I'm not going to go that far, Jeff.
Why not? Come on, let's rattle everybody up. We may be rioting in the street tomorrow because of this broadcast. You know that. Worldwide.
Well, I love the union. I don't want any agents knocking on my door in the morning. But I got to say that I think that's where we're going with Real ID. And now the bills in the states currently vary in strength. The strongest was New Hampshire. When it came out, it was the first last year to come under consideration, largely through the leadership of Neil Kirk. But you had an incredible situation in New Hampshire in which their full General Assembly overturned a committee report in order to oppose Real ID. You had the Transportation Committee there who had succumbed to federal interests. The Congress had actually Sensenbrenner and personally sent an aide to persuade members of New Hampshire's Transportation Committee. Neil Kirk gets up in the General Assembly and says, the Transportation Committee is trying to get us to comply with Real ID. We cannot sacrifice our liberties this way. The House agrees. Senate doesn't. It comes very close. But that the point there is that New Hampshire's bill would have absolutely forbid them to partake in Real ID. Now, everyone's really excited about what happened in Maine. Maine has become the first state to pass an anti-Real ID resolution. But the problem is that it's a non-binding resolution. And they've said, we the legislature do not want to comply. We call upon the Congress to repeal the Real ID Act. But at the end of the day, it has no legal authority. If their Department of Transportation implements Real ID, there's no legal recourse. And so you have the bills in these 12 states ranging in force between these two poles, between New Hampshire's absolute prohibition and Maine's expression of general will.
I'm going to go back to the DMV. Someone is there. For some reason, their papers don't cut it. What happens? They bring all these papers, and the person there says, well, no, these don't comply. We need whatever the case may be. And this is going to happen not only hundreds of thousands, of probably millions of times, I mean, considering all the drivers we have.
Right.
What happens to this poor guy or poor gal? You know, I mean, he walks out saying, I'm a non-person. I can't drive. I mean, what happens to this person?
I think that phrase non-person is a pretty important phrase. This was, I mentioned the issue in Georgia over in this last election cycle. And that was essentially the argument. The legislators and citizens in Georgia viewed voter identification as a civil rights issue because in their view, there were a significant number of elderly, largely poor people in Georgia who didn't have driver's licenses or other types of requisite photo identification. And so in that context, you essentially would, such identification in their view would have essentially turned those elderly people, those poor people, into non-persons as concerned their civil rights to vote.
Yeah.
And so when you're talking about someone not being able to do business with the federal government, to enter an airport, to even drive without one of these licenses, without one of these real IDs, you are talking about ghettoizing them in a way. And you're talking about segregating them from the activity of mainstream American society. Mm. And that's probably an issue that people, legislators, didn't give enough thought to when they proposed this bill.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but you've got me really angry.
Well, there's one person will be rioting out the streets tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm going to be rioting the street all by myself. You'll know who I am. I'll just have my hands up in the air yelling and screaming like a madman. When I was younger, I'd watch a lot of these World War II movies when they were popular. And, of course, the famous words that you'd hear all the time, you know, when they talked about, you know, the occupation of the German army.
Right.
You know, in France and Spain and Czechoslovakia and whatever. And you see a man walking down the street. Then a government official will come up, and what would he say? Where are your papers?
That's right.
And it always gave me a chill, like, wow, you know, they have to have papers to prove who they are.
Right.
You know, am I glad I don't live in a place like that? And when I heard about Real ID, that was a instant flashback that I had, is that where are your papers? Are we not going in the same place, or is just my mind wandering too far at this point?
Well, I don't think we're there. I don't.
I mean, on that road.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, Real ID is not the what's going to take us there, but something after Real ID. You know, if Real ID desensitizes us to our freedoms further, it's a step in that direction. Absolutely, and this is a case where the slippery slope argument has a lot of merit. Especially when you look at the long history in this nation of the increasing tendency towards centralization of data and data collection and data sharing. And I think it's important for people, and I think we take it for granted all the time, the reality of our freedom when it comes to freedom of movement. Freedom of movement is a defining freedom of Western society. And so, yes, when you have to undergo a process of identification to do basic tasks in society, it does fundamentally change what it means to be a part and to be a citizen within that society. You get into issues of this Orwellian picture of a society in which the member of a party can gain access to the perks of that society by making sacrifices, whereas those who don't share in those sacrifices don't partake. Mm. You talk about creating two different societies. And even today, I think people have to come to terms with the reality that to take part in our basic day-to-day activities, we undergo a level of data collection, a level of sacrificing our sphere of privacy that is becoming increasingly shortened, increasingly right. Shrunken until the point that we don't even have the right to control information about our own bodies, about our own thoughts. These things are not fantasy. This is not conspiracy. This is reality.
Right. Just let me take a second for station identification, which we forgot to do 10 minutes ago. This is Joe Cristiano. Our guest is Mike Hammer. We're talking about Real ID, and this is Liberty Talk Radio. And thank you for tuning in. Well, Mike, whatever happened to things like the privacy acts that we have? We have, you know, it seems that we have laws, and then we come out with other edicts that contradict the first one, and they all seem to be contesting one another.
Right.
If we have the privacy legislations, the privacy, you know, for example, if you're an employer, there are privacy issues that even if you in your medical reports, your employer is not supposed to know. And I can't think of the word for it; it's stuck in my head. But as you know, you understand
right.
what I mean.
Right.
That There are there's a HIPAA acts, you know, where only certain people are allowed to know certain things. And in fact, my wife's an audiologist, and she actually had to put screens around her computer because it was conceivable now, believe it or not, conceivable that a patient may walk in and look over the counter and look at the monitor, the computer monitor, and can see information relative to one of her patients. First of all, that's practically impossible,
right,
you know.
Right.
But she had to get one of these screen things on her computers and all that. I mean, this is how ticklish they get with the privacy issue and medical information.
Right.
But then on the other hand, the government says, yeah, and then we're going to print it and give it to everybody in the world.
Well, that's right.
I mean, where's the logic in that?
Well, I think if a person looks across privacy protections in a variety of areas of life, whether it's health, your consumer information, your bank transactions, the logic is very consistent. And the logic is that there is, in fact, a superficial protection of privacy. But the notable exception to all of those privacy acts is that the federal government itself is exempt from those things. HIPAA is a great example, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, because if you've ever read one of those HIPAA disclaimers, it says, oh, your information is perfectly safe. It's perfectly private, except for when somebody needs it for this or somebody needs it for that or when it's required to verify this or verify that. A lot of that having to do with Medicare, Medicaid, other programs in which the federal government is involved. So the federal government's involvement in those programs then gives them access to that information.
Right.
So there is data protection in place as concerns driver's licenses. The problem is that people far more knowledgeable in the law than myself have said that, in fact, Real ID runs roughshod over a good number of those protections. And then when you put on top of that not only the Patriot Act, but also the sort of furtive actions that are taken in the name of national security, it creates a system in which you really don't know in practice how the law is going to be applied. And at the end of the day, we will have to have a Congress and state legislatures, I believe, that will pass real, meaningful privacy legislation that has some teeth to it. Because I think that what is in place today, in my educated, non-lawyer perspective, is not adequate.
Well, it doesn't seem that what you subscribe to with Congress eventually making that will never happen, not the way we're going. In fact, it's going in the opposite direction.
Probably.
When they would not even spend some they wouldn't even object to this tagging on such a bill. It's not that the people in Congress and the representatives and the senators are totally ignorant of this. I mean, they have multiple people in their staff who study every bill that's going in and all the attachments. They know it's there.
Right.
I mean, they don't go, well, geez, I didn't know that Bobby did that and never told me.
Right.
They have a staff who's telling them this is what's on there, and they, for some reason, ignored it. That puzzles me, and I'm concerned because there seems to be no outcry from anyone except for people on this program, you and I, at
well,
this point.
I would say, Joe, this in fact is an exciting time. And Real ID, I think, has had some exciting effects that people didn't anticipate. As concerns what you just said, you're absolutely right. The sin committed in Congress concerning Real ID was not a sin of ignorance. They knew it was there. The sin was the tactic used by Sensenbrenner and others to tack the Real ID onto other legislation, which Congress felt in good conscience they could not vote against. Because essentially, with the way it turned out, in order to vote against Real ID, Congress would have had to vote it against the war funding for the war, which of course many people now would be okay with, but also against tsunami relief. Those are just two things that most Congress people are not politically ready to vote against in order to scuttle Real ID. So there are many sins, but you're absolutely right. The sin was not ignorance. The exciting thing now is at the state level, for that matter, also at the federal level, because there is a bill in Congress today that would repeal Real ID. It's important for people to learn about that bill, and everyone in the United States listening now can contact their representative, contact their senator. That bill will go to committee. It will be heard, and people need to put the pressure on about that. Concerning the states, again, there are around a dozen states that are fighting Real ID to some degree, and it's important to plug in, and it's important to get involved, because at the state level, there is still some semblance of democracy. There is some expectation that you can go to your state representative and your state senator and might possibly get the time of day. There's some expectation that if they get 20 calls to their office, 20 letters, it doesn't take much at the state level. For those listeners here in Oklahoma, there is an important bill going to committee on Tuesday. It's going to the Senate Committee for Public Safety and Homeland Security. Ironically enough, although libertarians have traditionally associated with Republicans, it was, in fact, a liberal Democrat who wrote this bill here in Oklahoma. It was Senator Constance Johnson. She is a Democrat from Oklahoma City. The bill is Senate Bill 464. It's going to the Committee on Public Safety and Homeland Security. Should probably pass committee, but there are so many points in our legislative process for a bill to get killed that it requires constant attention. And so my work with the Oklahoma Defense of Freedom Project is to serve to be a very, very vigilant eye on these types of issues, on information policy issues, on privacy issues, due process issues. And so if you go to our website, www.odfp.org, within the next week, we will begin our mission of being a clearinghouse on this type of information.
Right. This will take us in another direction, and we're out of time, but I will make this comment.
Okay.
I object to having to write to my congressman. I mean, if my congressman cannot see that this is a boondoggle, that this is liberating right, I mean, the man doesn't, or the woman doesn't belong there. I mean, this is outright, you know, this is hijacking our liberty. This is not sort of, well, maybe, yes or no. This is insane. I mean, if he read just one two-page article on the subject, he'd realize that this not only violates our liberties, this is going to tax us tremendously. This is a gun up the system. We're going to have people who are non-people. People are going to be under suspicion by the FBI, the CIA, Homeland Security, because they didn't have a particular document, and they're going to be reported. Everyone's going to be now categorized. You know, you're going to be a Category 3 person because you couldn't provide this. That Category 3 goes in a database. All Category 3 people are going to be under suspicion. Something like that.
Right.
We know that. This is the way the system works, because they can't take individual names and individual situations. They will have to categorize or classify everybody. And now we're going to be classifications, as you say. Anyway, it irks me that I ever have to write or call my congressman. If he or she is that dumb, they don't belong there. It just aggravates me. Okay.
Well, I agree.
Now, would you want to repeat the website and any other information so people know where to go?
Absolutely.
Because we're running out of time real quickly.
www.odfp.org. You can also email info@odfp.org. We will be a good source of information for anyone across the nation that cares about these issues.
Okay. Well, Mike, that has been enlightening. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
You have done a real service to us by being here tonight, because our listeners, I think, learned a lot. I thought I knew something about that, and I knew very little about it as a result of listening to you. Now I know a lot more. Unfortunately, I am very upset.
Well, that's but a good thing.
But that's good, because we all should be upset, okay? And we're going to conclude our program tonight by playing our song. Okay, Mike, thanks a million for being here. I appreciate so much. Okay, now this is the end of tonight's program. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Or you can phone in your questions to area code 903-551-2186. I did want to recognize one organization here in Tulsa. I promise I would do this because they do a wonderful job. And that's the Zoe Animal Rescue Service. That's Z-O-I Animal Rescue Service. They do help in rescuing poor dogs and cats and the like. They do a wonderful job. And, of course, it's a nonprofit organization. Their telephone number is area code 918-734-1184. If you find it in your heart to support the Zoe Animal Rescue Service, that would be very much appreciated. On Thursday morning, we'll be talking again about the government school system, and I'm going to respond to a couple of the speeches given by some of the candidates. And by the way, Mike, we haven't heard any of our candidates talk about this issue, have we?
There is one Republican candidate I'd like to hear from, Paul. He has been a principal voice for liberty, and you mentioned her opinion on this, but of the so-called frontrunners, absolutely not.
Okay, very good. Okay, and with that, good evening, everyone.